Welcome back, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook podcast. On today's show, we have Coach Mike Harper of Muhlenberg County on to discuss blob situations, how kids have changed over the years, and how that affects how he has changed his coaching methods, and how he's willing to find what works in each game to get a win. Tune in next week as we start a new series titled Titans of Twitter, in which we'll bring on some of the biggest basketball personalities on Twitter. We will do two shows a week, with the first episode releasing Tuesday, with Packline perfectionist Coach Jim Boone. Hope you enjoy. Today we're joined by Coach Mike Harper of Muhlenberg County High School. Coach Harper spent many years as the head coach at Muhlenberg North High School before the two county schools consolidated, and he took the helm as the only girls basketball coach in school history as the head coach of the Mustangs. In his time as a head coach, he has won 9 regional tournaments and has continued his long-term success, which has made him a future Hall of Fame coach. Very grateful to have a friend and mentor of mine on. Coach Harper, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you for having me on. I think it's your podcast has been great. I've listened to several of them, and of course, I think you are one of the rising stars as far as coaches, I think, in our state.
Well, I appreciate those kind words. We've known each other for a really long time through a lot of different channels. And, of course, having my brother having coached for you, and this is an exciting one for me, in particular. But let's jump right into this thing. One thing for people who don't know who you are, Coach, you've just had a lot of success, spanned over a long time. You won your first regional title back in 2000. Your most recent was in 2015. And obviously having great players is important, but, how have you noticed that players, have you noticed players changing over the years? And how have you adjusted how you approach relationships, practices, off season, or just whatever you want to, whatever direction you want to take that?
Well, I mean, I think nowadays, kids today, I think, before they can buy into what you're doing and play hard for you, I think they've got to believe that you care about them. Not that they didn't back 20 years ago, but I think that's important now. I mean, I really do. I think kids are different in that sense. I think their attention spans are a little are not as good as they used to be. I think as far as practice, I've noticed – I've tried to do things. Obviously, you want to do drills early to get loose, but things that are important, like something new, you really want to get into that earlier in practice, and maybe a lot of drills that you want to get a lot of repetitions in as far as shooting and things like that. I've sort of put them toward the end a lot now, where I might have had them earlier in practice. So I think those are a couple of things, and I think we just try to do some different things that, practice needs to be harder than games, obviously, I think. It's something I've always believed. But I think kids want to have fun as well. And, we've done a lot of different things over the last few years. I mean, theme day, something, that I actually got from you. We try to do as many things as possible outside of practice to bring our team together as much as possible. I've always had a Christmas party. I used to have a Christmas party always at my house, but now it's turned into something we do usually before or after Christmas, at a tournament somewhere. But, just things that I think kids are different in that you've got to basically, they got, in order for them to play hard for you, they've got to know you care about.
You mentioned the attention span, and, there's some data to kind of back that up. There's a lot of research that shows we live in a day and a time of, we call it a microwave culture where, everything's done immediately. We can communicate instantly. Information gets shared so quickly, and with the phone at their fingertips, they can just be on to the next thing. I'm blown away how, my kids can be doing about 15 things at once on their phone, and probably doing a decent job of all of it. I think that's, played a huge factor into that. And I think coaches who are cognizant of that, like yourself, that are making those changes because of those things are probably, putting themselves farther along. And I think there's a lot that goes into understanding players today for both the relationship aspect, but also how they learn. Mike Nabors is a great resource for anybody that, you know, is interested in that kind of stuff. And Tim Elmore writes a lot of books about kids in the generation today. But I think it's a great approach, the one that you take of I may need to change some things for the kids rather than, oh, well, kids have just changed and, you know, get off my porch. So kudos to you. Well, and that's probably why you've won extensively.
We play a lot more, like doing drills, shooting drills. We'll play music probably a couple of times a week at least, and if somebody would have told me that I was going to do that in the future 15 years ago, I would have thought they were crazy. But little things like that, I think, are important. There's been times in practice where we've had a good little series of practices. Last year or year before last, we ended up playing wiffle ball, at the end of one practice, which is something that, I wouldn't have done 15 years ago. But I think it's more things you can do like that can make practice fun, and it can, it's just good, I think, as far as getting kids to buy in to what you're trying to get them to do.
All right. You have had some really special teams. You've had state champion caliber teams through the years and have coached NCAA national champions. And, you're a regular at the state tournament, whether it be as a coach or spectator. I think coaches, we kind of always see what coaches are always at the state tournament. And I've always seen you there, usually on the sideline coaching, but in the stands as well. What have you noticed that those elite teams that are playing and making a run at it? What are some of the things that those elite teams have in common, you think?
Obviously, you got to have some good players. But beside that, I think just from experience, when teams I've coached that made it to the Final Four a couple of times, I think playing defense is important. I think those teams that play defense consistently game in and game out, it gives them a better chance to make a run to win the state tournament than the team that does not, just because if you have an off shooting night, your defense is there. It keeps you in the game. It gives you a chance to win the basketball game. I think, obviously, you got to have a go-to score, maybe a balanced attack as far as offensively. And I think the better schedule you've played throughout, the season, I think helps you be able to make that run at the state tournament as well.
That's really good. You talk about, defense and, rarely in the state tournament, our team's just lighting it up. The games are just a little tighter. It's a little harder to score sometimes. And so I think that's a great point.
We had one year, first round game against West Carter. We had a team that we had three kids that averaged at least 15 points a game or more. I think we averaged right at 70 points a game that year, but, it was like in the 30s. It was a close game. We won the game because we played really good defense. And West Carter was a good team too. They were very similar to us. And, it was a grinded out type of defensive battle, and we won because we played good defense and we kept ourselves in the game. Even though we couldn't score, we kept the other team from scoring.
That's good stuff. The next thing I kind of want to hit on is something that I just have felt like is one of your strongest points as a coach, having coached against you a lot and, having watched you coach. You just seem like you really know when it's the right time to just try something different. I think a lot of coaches can catch themselves, and myself as well, doubling down. You may feel like you have a good plan and then maybe the players aren't executing it and, you kind of hit your head against the wall, but, it might be a good idea to just try something different. But it just seems like you're always, you just keep plugging until you find something that works. Was this something that came with experience, or has this kind of been a philosophy of yours from the beginning?
Well, I don't know. Probably something just comes with experience and wanting to win, obviously. I mean, that's what the, you know, it's why they keep score. But I think from game to game, I mean, you usually, most of my teams in the past have been motion-oriented offensively. And, you know, sometimes you have to make a change. I know we had a team one particular year that we had worked on two posts in practice, even though we didn't have, you know, a post player, but our two people we put in the post were guards. And one game we had trouble scoring, and we ended up putting Amia and Hope in there, and we ran that two post. It got us going offensively. It was just a different look. And, you know, I think it just depends on what you might do, what changes you might make in the game is what you might have in your arsenal as for what is what you have worked on in practice. But I mean, there's been times defensively, if something's not working, I mean, you just keep trying something different to finally find something that works. So whether it's play, I mean, we have went from playing man to man to triangle and two in games before. That's worked. That's sort of got the other team out of rhythm, and then went back to playing man to man. So it's something I think with experience and just having a your intuition sometimes tells you to do something, and you try it and you have confidence in it, and you know, hopefully it works. I think that can happen as far as the season itself too. I mean, I've had teams in the past, I know one year we were weren't very deep as far as our personnel, but we worked preseason, playing man-to-man, and we got into our season a little bit, and we had this little press that we had, and we figured out that we were a better team if we were pressing. I mean, even though we only had five players, but we were able to make that adjustment, and our practices became more press-oriented than what they had been in the preseason, just because our two best players, that's how they needed to play. And that was probably as much fun coaching in a year that I've ever had.
I think that's a great point and a great specific example. I had a Hall of Fame coach tell me one time, she said, would you rather win or be right? Because I was so stubborn about playing man. And, you know, I said, okay, that's fair. And it definitely made me a lot more, I think, receptive to trying something new, you know, or, you know, and then somebody else mentioned, you know, I had a lot of trouble, like, man, I don't know if we should try to press this team or not. You know, and they said, you don't have to be married to it. And I think that was just a way to put it in my head, like, okay, you know, we can try this. And if it doesn't work, we, you know, we can always get back to something else. But, you know, those are things I think are great. And I learned a great example in my very first year as a coach. Going against Nell Fuchs, who's a Hall of Famer, one of the all-time leaders in wins in Kentucky. And she had played man-to-man every game all season, and we had watched them a ton. And then we get to the last game of the regular season at their place, and she played us man the first possession of the game. We scored, and then she played 2-3 the rest of the game. And we hadn't worked on our 2-3 zone offense. We hadn't – I just was so sure that she was going to be so stubborn, we wouldn't see it. So we were really out of, you know, out of sorts, and – they had a chance to beat us when we had a much better team. But, you know, I think those are lessons that I've learned that kind of definitely back what you said.
Well, I've grown and got enough confidence in that I'll ask my players sometimes, I mean, in a huddle, if something's not working, I'll ask them, you know, what do you have confidence in? You know, what do you want to do? I mean, we play a lot of man-to-man, and I've had them ask me, can we press, you know? And, you know, so I think sometimes you've got to figure out what your players have confidence in sometimes as far as in a particular game.
That's really good too. And knowing which kid to ask, I think is pretty smart there.
That's
too.
That's always important, yeah.
We had one
that's
of our
always important.
One of our post players, we shot about like 12% from three as a team, and one of our post players, you know, we asked, what do you guys think? And she's like, maybe we should try some five out. And I said, well, honey, we'll be five out and they'll be five in the paint. So, but we can try it. yeah, I think that's good. Tim Riley, a mentor of mine, another, you know, state champion coach on the boys' side, told me that players control about 90% of the game, and as coaches, we're fighting for about 10% of it. And I think that probably is more true on the boys' side than the girls' side. I think there's more points to be stolen, but I do think it's our job to steal points and prepare our team however we can. So what are some, you know, what are some things that you might do specifically when preparing for an opponent that you might prepare to steal points for your team?
Well, a lot of times it depends on the opponent and, you know, what they do. You watch film and you prepare for them. And a lot of times, I'm thinking, you know, postseason, a lot of times somebody you've played, like a district opponent, you've played a couple of times and you know them real well. And you know what they might do at a particular time in the game. We have in the past had like in a half court or man, we've had running jump where at the timeout, in the, you know, late in the game, fourth quarter, they're not expecting it. We, you know, run and jump the ball handler, you know, get a turnover. That is something we might do. A specific set that we might put in for each game. I mean, I used to, haven't the last year or two, but I would, used to try to, depending on who we're playing, put in a specific set for a specific game and maybe try to run that if we get the tilt. Or one, you know, I've got a couple, I like to get layups, you know, at opportune times in the games. I think every coach probably does, but, you know, you pick your spots to try to, you know, do something that's a surprise to the other team. The last couple of years, we've had trouble getting tilts against certain teams. There's been a couple of times that we have, that we don't ever do. I probably have never done this till the last couple of years, but we have out of a opening tip-off, we have gotten into a 1-2-2 half-court trap, which is something we don't normally play a lot of, but, you know, we've done it a couple of times. And it worked once, and the other time, I think the other team scored a layup. So, you know, we're 50-50 on that one. But, you know, just some things like that. I mean, if that's what you're asking about, something as far as stealing points against a specific team at a specific time of the game.
Yeah, definitely. And I think – you know, one area that we can, as coaches, can do that is, and at least for me, is based on a bounds place. One thing that I'm very big on trying to win the blob war. I call it, you know, I talk about my staff, let's win the blob war, based on a bound war, because we, you know, we spend a lot of time preparing against the other teams based on a bounds plays. And we'll put a little wrinkle, you know, if we see that the, you know, our opponent's guard based on a bounds, you know, we watch every based on a bounds play on all of our opponents because we want to catch something that'll allow us within what we already do, maybe to just get a nice, easy wrinkle and get a bucket or two that way. You know, and then another thing that with based on a bounds that we try to do is, you know, we have based on a bounds plays where we'll run them all year. And we're kind of saving the counter for the regional tournament. And so, you know, we make sure, you know, we go out of our way to make sure when we play those teams that we believe we'll see in the regional tournament, you know, we'll run those plays. And even, you know, we may know we're not going to score off of them, but we just want them to have seen that because we know a good coaching staff's probably going to go back and look at that. And it's always a good feeling when we make a call and, you know, the other side's coaching staff is yelling, you know, watch the handoff, watch. And, you know, we end up getting the other thing. And, you know, so that's just something that we've kind of done in a few years that have helped us. We had a big three against Marshall County in regional finals to beat them off of one of our counters. So just stuff to think about.
Yeah, out of bounds plays. I know in a regional tournament, we were preparing for an opponent. It's been 3 years ago, and we noticed watching film that they would zone out of bounds and their backs would be to the inbounder. And so I had this bright idea and we didn't try it, but we worked on it a little bit in practice where just a little pass right off the back of the player and you got a little layup there. I mean, that's something that if it would have been there, we would have tried to have done it. But it, and I specifically told my player that she doesn't try it unless I tell her to, but that's something that we were going to try, you know, because we saw them I mean, watching film, they had no clue what the inbounder was doing about half the time. And, but it didn't materialize. So,
switching gears and just looking at preparation, you know, how much time do you spend, whether it be, as a team on film, or how do you handle scouting reports? Does that change throughout the season? You know, I think this is just, this is the single area that I feel like coaches are just so far on opposite ends of the spectrum into what they do. So what does that preparation look like for you guys?
I think, you know, with scouting reports, I think you've got to be consistent. I mean, I think if you're playing a top 10 team, or if you're playing a team that, you know, you should beat by 30 points, I think you've got to be consistent in that you're preparing for them and you're making your kids think it's important to prepare for them, and you're getting ready for the postseason, when no matter who you play, you got to prepare for that particular game, that particular team, because if you don't win, you go home basically. And so I think it's got to be consistent. You know, film-wise, you know, I used to watch more film, and we've talked about this, being you have, and I've talked to other coaches too. I think it's something going into next season I'm going to try to incorporate, watching film each and every day in practice. Just for a little bit, because I think kids nowadays are more visual, and I think the more they see, the better they learn. It's as far as scouting itself, you know, we used to watch film maybe the night before we would play somebody a little bit at the end of practice, and we've still tried to do that. Of course, that's changed a little bit since we consolidated, because we're, as far as the logistics of us practicing, you know, our two campuses are 5 miles apart, and we're not in one place all the time, which, you know, it used to be a little different before consolidation as far as preparing for a team. But we still do pretty much the same thing. We'll walk through things. We'll walk through what the other team is doing defensively. And not always, but we will have a scout team, especially late in the year, that learns a lot of the key sets for the other team before we play. You know, I used to have my administration and some of our people from around the school that would get involved a little bit when they were a little bit more athletic back in the day. But we don't do that quite as much, and myself included. But those are some things we always try to do. Always walk through, always go through what they're doing offensively. I think one thing people don't always think about, I think what they're going to try to do to you defensively, who's going to be guarding you, what's going to work for us offensively, you know, that's something I think is important as well.
And that's a great point, you know, planning for those things. One thing I picked up through doing these podcasts that I didn't think, you know, too much about in the past, and I probably should have, is, you know, one little, if, you know, if you go into a game, you know, teams are switching everything, you know, you can kind of pick on their worst defender. You know, you can create a switch to, you know, get your best, you know, breakdown, you know, best ball handling guy, or that your best scorer. And kind of,
yeah, you
want
to try to get some mismatch, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I wish I thought of that more, especially, you know, at crucial times. That may be something you hold on to or save. Let's talk about late game situations. You know, at what point in the season are you putting in and you're working on your late clock stuff? And how do you try to simulate those crucial moments, if it's even possible?
Well, I mean, I think usually out of habit, I've, you know, gotten into it later in the year. I mean, you know, the last few years I've mentally wanted to start doing it even in preseason, because we went and watched Davidson, me and a couple other coaches a couple of years ago, watched them practice in October, and they were doing things like that then, just, you know, in little bits and pieces of practice here and there. But you know, I think late in the year is when we usually really get into it. But at the same time, we do it throughout the year too. I mean, I think important situations are just like being up, you know, 4 points late in the game. We do a lot of three possession and five possession drills where, you know, we're on defense, offense, defense, and we got to keep that score, you know, a 4-point lead, you know, by getting a stop, getting a bucket, getting a stop. And we'll do that with five possessions as well. And we'll use the clock a lot. I mean, because I think it's important. Kids nowadays seem to have trouble playing with a lead. And it's something that we've tried to work on in practice, just putting a lead up there on the clock and playing in the fourth quarter for about 4 or 5 minutes. You know, just putting yourself in those kind of situations. Also, I mean, late game situations like side out of bounds plays and just working for a good shot at the end of the game, putting yourself in that situation mentally. I think we try to do little things like that. And we don't always put them in as far as memory, but I know one thing I always believe that, like full court out of bounds plays to win the game, you know, I think that you've got to at least have done that a few times, because when you draw something up, you know, in a key spot, I think they've got to have at least done that before in practice. A good story, regional semis, I can't remember, 2000, back in, it was at North, we had this late game play, full court play, and it was basically it's the hook and ladder play. I'm sure you've seen that. I think Valparaiso ran that years ago. But we had our kid who had made the long pass was out with a knee injury, but she had dressed out. So here we are with like 3.5 seconds left, and you know, we're down one, and here she goes into the game. Because I decided I want her to make that pass. And we make play, and our fourth option to score ended up having to be the one who made the basket. And it just happened to be probably my smartest player on the floor, too. But, you know, I think you've got to go over situations that you're going to see in a game, especially late in the year in the postseason. Even if you don't memorize them, I think they've got to have seen it, done it a little bit so that they are familiar with it when you draw it up.
Yeah, I agree completely. When I first started, I thought coaching was, man, in a crucial moment, you know, I'm going to pick up the whiteboard. I'm going to draw something awesome. They're going to go out and execute and look at me. And how silly that even sounds now looking back. You know, the odds that they're going to go.
I mean, you got to go. You got to go with something they're familiar with. I mean, you can make a tweak, you know, with it, with whatever that play might be. That's going to be a little different. But I think it's got to be something that they have been in that position on the floor at some point in time.
Really quickly to build on one drill that I stole from somebody that I absolutely love. We can't do it enough. One drill I picked up. We call it 40-40 drill, but both teams start at 40. There's either 2 or 3 minutes on the clock. I think usually put like 2 minutes up there. And both teams just, they play. And once one team hits 46, we start the clock. So it might be 46-40. It might be 46-45, whatever. But once one team hits 46, the clock starts running. And so now you've got two teams, you know, you've got both teams that are having to practice, you know, being down and being up late. And so we get a lot of good teaching moments out of that. We try to film that, and we love that drill. Let's move on to the last segment here. I'm going to throw a full court press on you. You're going to have 10 seconds or less to answer these rapid-fire questions. You ready?
Okay.
All right. Does high school need a shot clock?
I think it would be exciting. I would say yes.
Should they seed the state tournament?
A traditionalist, I would say no. I like being able to – get that draw, and it's exciting, and I just like the draw.
I bet you also think the National League does not need a DH.
No. Even though there's been a couple of times in the past that I wish that it would have been seated, because we might have, you know, but year in, year out, I'm a traditionalist with that. I think that it, I like the way it is.
All right, least favorite person to coach against?
I'd say a tie. Tom Faust, John Kirkpatrick and Wyatt Faust.
Favorite high school gym in Kentucky aside from your own?
I have some great memories coaching at Ohio County.
All right. What's the best hidden food gym in Muhlenberg County?
The Buggy Shed. Great breakfast place down in Beachmont.
The Buggy Shed. What an answer, Coach. What an answer. Hey, I appreciate you taking some time out to spend with us and share your knowledge, Coach.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it.
Yep. See ya.
For Coach Harper, this has been Wyatt Faust, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook Podcast. Next Tuesday, Coach Jim Boone, one of the winningest D2 men's coaches in America, joins us to talk pack line defense and utilizing assistant coaches. Until then, keep getting better.